Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Palestinian resistance movements say the deadly shooting operation in Tel Aviv was a legitimate response to intensified Israeli crimes against the Palestinians. Iran urges an immediate cessation of hostilities in Ukraine amid a deteriorating humanitarian situation in and around the country. And Peruvians again take to the streets in another anti-government protest over rising food and fuel prices. Hello and welcome. We are coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. At least 2 people are killed and 9 more wounded in a Palestinian shooting operation in the Israeli capital, Tel Aviv. This was the 4th such attack in the last 2 weeks. Some of the victims are said to be in critical conditions. Initial reports suggest the shootings took place at several locations. One of the shooters is said to be killed by Israeli forces. And at least one suspect is still at large. Palestinian resistance groups have hailed the operation, with Hamas saying that it showed the ability of Palestinians to carry attacks in the heart of the occupied territories. A statement by Popular Resistance Committees says the attack was a legitimate response to intensified Israeli crimes against the Palestinians. This is the latest in a series of deadly operations that began last month in response to Israel's crimes and occupation. 11 Israelis were killed in the last 3 attacks. Haram Aleh correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier with an update on the latest deadly shooting incidents in Israel. Stick listen.
Now, contrary to prior reports about several gunmen, the Israeli police officials suspect that the operation was carried out by a single shooter and that the perpetrator could be from the occupied West Bank and from Jenin city, northern the occupied West Bank. The shooter escaped the scene and wasn't caught. Israeli police said the assailant was on the run and they are moving house to house searching for him. More than 1,000 police officers, including elite police and military units, as well as special units, have joined the operation. As you have said, 2 Israelis were killed and almost 9 others were wounded. 4 of them are in serious condition. This operation was carried out in central Tel Aviv in several locations near busy central shopping streets, Dezengov Street. It's filled with restaurants.
Political commentator Paul Lurie says occupied people have a right to resist against occupiers with all available means to them.
Every occupied people have a right to resist, and the Palestinians are resisting with the means that they have. And they will, if they reach a level of resistance that is intolerable to the occupiers, the Israelis, then they will succeed, because there is a point at which the occupiers, the Israelis, will say, well, we can't take any more, we're getting out of here. This is the method of resistance. It has worked in other places. It's worked in Algiers, for example. And they expelled the occupier. This is what the Palestinians have been trying to do for a long time, and this is a new wave, a new setting for the resistance in Palestine.
Yemen's Ansarullah movement slams talks hosted by Saudi Arabia on the Yemeni conflict, saying the future of the country will be determined by Yemenis themselves. A spokesman for the movement says the Yemeni nation does not care about the talks sponsored by illegal parties. Mohammed Abdel Salam says the only option for the Saudi-led coalition to promote peace is to stop attacks, lift its siege, and move out its forces. Other than that, he says, efforts to settle the conflict are nothing but desperate attempts to regroup mercenaries and use them to escalate tensions. The remarks follow an announcement by former Yemeni President Abd Rabbah Mansour Hadi at the end of the Yemen talks in Riyadh that his authority and powers have been transferred to a new presidential council. Back in 2015, Hadi resigned and fled to Saudi Arabia. Afterwards, the kingdom launched a military campaign to bring him back to power, but to no avail. Days after a ceasefire agreement came into force in Yemen, Sana'a International Airport has yet to receive commercial flights for the first time in 7 years. Fear is now growing over the failure of another truce in the war-torn country. Robert Carter has been speaking to experts and brings us this report from London.
Just days after a UN-backed truce came into force in Yemen, fears have risen over the implementation of the agreement, with key promises regarding commercial flights being allowed to enter Sana'a's international airport failing to materialize so far. At the time of the UN announcement, senior Yemeni officials warned onlookers to remain cautious about raising their hopes prematurely. Despite the warning, many Yemenis have already become excited for an end to the war.
The truce is wonderful for us and the region in general, a great thing, and we hope that the truce will last not only for 2 months, but rather permanently, because the people are tired and they have suffered a lot.
Yemenis have faced their fair share of disappointment over the years in regards to peace efforts. Multiple nationwide ceasefires have all failed, and the 2018 peace talks hosted by Sweden also failed to produce an end to the conflict. However, experts still believe the flights will begin soon.
The truce is holding very well. Reports of violations do not amount to breaking the truce. It's the usual standard violations that take place in similar situations. The Saudis have been trying to get out of this quagmire for a long time. And the big major conference in Riyadh is their way to initiate the exit out of the Yemen conflict. So I'm very hopeful that this will lead to some major break in the Yemeni conflict.
This truce, which the United Nations is already celebrating, could turn into a curse rather than a blessing for millions of Yemenis if key pledges regarding the siege are not upheld. In particular, so many will be hoping that they can finally get into Yemen to visit their besieged loved ones. If that turns out not to be the case, then it would be another additional heartbreak on top of the many already broken hearts which have been caused by this devastating conflict. Robert Carter, London.
Iraqi media say the country's Ain al-Assad airbase that hosts U.S. forces has been targeted by a drone strike. Local news sources report that two drones and two rockets have struck the heavily fortified base in Anbar province in the west of the country. The base's CRAM defense system was reportedly activated and shot down the incoming rockets and chased off the drones as well. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack. U.S. bases, diplomatic missions and supply trucks in Iraq have been frequently hit by rockets and improvised devices in recent years amid growing anti-America sentiment in the Arab country. The UN General Assembly votes to remove Russia from the Human Rights Council. Members voted 93 in favor and 24 against the U.S.-initiated motion, while 58 abstained. The Russian Foreign Ministry has called the vote illegal and practically motivated, or politically motivated, I should say, saying it is quitting the council immediately. Russia stands accused of human rights violations and abuses in Ukraine, but it denies the accusation. Speaking at the session, Iran's ambassador to the UN, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, warned against politicizing the human rights issue.
Iran remains deeply concerned about the continuous deterioration of the humanitarian situation in and around Ukraine, which has sparked significant alarm in the international community. We call for an immediate cessation of hostilities and emphasize the importance of complying with international humanitarian law by all parties. We repeat our call for unimpeded humanitarian access to all areas of the armed conflict in Ukraine. The humanitarian needs of the affected population must be addressed immediately, and the delivery of food, medicine, and other essential services to the people in need must be facilitated. The international community should encourage and support continued direct negotiations between Russia and Ukraine until peace is restored. The Islamic Republic of Iran once again calls for de-escalation of tensions in the current conflict and an urgent and lasting solution to this crisis through dialogue. Mr. President, we consider the text of the resolution before the General Assembly contained in document L3 as politically driven, which undermines the impartiality of our organization. My government attaches great importance to the promotion and protection of human rights. However, we are against the exploitation of UN human rights machinery for political ends, which contravenes the principles of universality, non-selectivity, and objectivity in addressing human rights issues. We have always maintained that human rights should not be undermined by short-sighted political considerations. We stress that the work of the Human Rights Council should be performed in a non-confrontational and non-politicized manner, and membership in this body should not be politicized.
The conflict between Russia and Ukraine is in its day 44. Ukrainian officials say with Russian airstrikes now mainly focused on the east, civilians in that region are advised to move out. The government in Kyiv claims Russia's armed forces are currently attempting to surround Ukrainian troops in the eastern region, but a Ukrainian presidential advisor says everything is under control and that Russian efforts in the east would be in vain. Meanwhile, the governor of Kharkiv says civilian areas there have been shelled 48 times over the past 24 hours. Russia says it's not targeting civilians. Elsewhere, the Kremlin has said the drawdown of Russian troops from around Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, is a goodwill gesture for the peace talks to move forward. It's becoming clear that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is not free to negotiate with Russians on his own terms. There are restrictions in the concessions he can give Russia. For example, some NATO members are sensitive about Zelensky giving up Ukrainian territory to Russia and giving Moscow a sense of victory. This puts the Ukraine conflict in another light, since there are U.S. and NATO objectives at play here while Ukrainians are dying.
Russia has warned the West against disrupting peace talks with Ukraine. Foreign Minister Lavrov says Russia believes the West is enabling hysteria around the alleged mass killings in the Ukrainian town to derail the peace talks between Moscow and Kiev. We tend to think that the reason lies in the desire to find a reason to disrupt the ongoing negotiations, and to do it exactly at the moment when, as they say, the light, even if not bright, but nevertheless began to dawn. According to Lavrov, in the course of negotiations with Russia, Kiev had for the first time put on paper its readiness to declare itself neutral, not aligned to any bloc, and non-nuclear. Lavrov insisted that the Ukrainians had formalized a refusal to deploy the weapons of foreign states on their territory or to conduct exercises there with the participation of a foreign military without the consent of all guarantor states of the future treaty, including Russia. The remarks by the Russian top diplomats highlight the possibility that Ukraine's Western backers may have different motivations or reservations about a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. For some NATO countries, the war between Ukraine and Russia is preferable to a peace deal.
Well, obviously, Ukraine is being utilized by NATO in a very dangerous experiment. And it's not the first time this has happened. This has really been kind of a century-old project dating back to after the First World War, when there was an attempt to prevent the growth of large major countries like Germany and Russia, so that Central Europe has always been used by, in those days, by the British and these days by the Americans as a wedge against any major country that might become a competitor.
The U.S. and NATO are claiming that there are larger issues at stake here, like security for European countries. Because of this, there are limits to how many compromises NATO countries will make to win peace. They say the result of a peace settlement needs to ensure that NATO members will not be the next target for Russia. The U.S. is also looking at the results of the talks to send a message to China vis-a-vis Taiwan.
There is a long track record of influential foreign policy thinkers who suggested America would benefit from Russia fighting an insurgency in Ukraine. The latest official to express the benefits of Ukrainian insurgency is U.S. Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Carl. I think with a high degree of certainty that Russia will emerge from Ukraine weaker than it went into the conflict. Militarily weaker, economically weaker, politically and geopolitically weaker, and more isolated.
Unfortunately, the United States is continuing to work, as they did after World War II, in Ukraine, against the Soviet Union to ally themselves with extremely right-wing forces who earlier had been associated with the Nazis. And that is a real factor in Ukraine. It's undeniable. And the United States is playing with them as a tool in a game against Russia. It's hard to say what the end game there is.
U.S. officials say they are skeptical that the Ukrainian government's negotiations with Russia will lead to a swift deal. And they are considering how a settlement will impact the security of NATO nations. Some European countries, especially formerly communist ones, are especially nervous about how the conflict will evolve. They believe if Russia feels it has profited from the invasion, it may eventually be inspired to try the same thing against other neighbors. NATO leaders say the Ukrainians are involved in a broader fight on behalf of Europe. Even a Ukrainian vow not to join NATO could be a concern for some neighbors. Therefore, it appears that for some in NATO, it's better for the Ukrainians to keep fighting and dying than to achieve peace. They believe the peace deal would come too early or at too high a cost to Kiev and the rest of Europe. European members themselves do not appear united on how much of a direct threat Russia poses to the alliance. Germany and France are more inclined than their allies in Eastern Europe to feel that Moscow's aims stop at the NATO border. For countries that are closer to the war, there is a belief that they have more at stake.
Now over to Peru, where the government has declared a state of emergency and it's on all its highways in a bid to clear roadblocks set up by truck drivers protesting against price hikes. The measure allows for the army to be deployed, clearing the blockades, while also suspending certain constitutional rights such as freedom of movement. Anger prevails across the South American nation over rising fuel and fertilizer prices. President Pedro Castillo has taken various measures to end the protests, including cutting taxes on fuel and raising the minimum wage. This week, he also declared a curfew in Lima to try to stifle dissent, but thousands defied the order and took to the streets in protests that later turned violent. The situation has put Castillo's political future in danger. His approval ratings have dipped to a record low of 19%. He recently survived a second impeachment in less than a year in power.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Once NSO Group's Pegasus spyware is successfully deployed against a user, it can hack any phone, intercept messages and emails, view a user's photographs and location, and turn the mobile into a remote listening device, allowing an NSO customer to listen in on conversation held in proximity to the phone. We have prepared for you an article written by Stephanie Kirchgassner. The piece is titled Victim's iPhone Hacked by Pegasus Spyware Weeks After Apple Sued NSO. New evidence has revealed that an Apple iPhone was successfully hacked by a government user of NSO Group's Pegasus spyware in December, weeks after the technology giant sued the Israeli company in a US court of law and called for it to be banned from harming individuals using Apple products. A report published on Tuesday, 5th of April, by security researchers at Frontline Defenders and Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto found that phones belonging to four Jordanian human rights defenders, lawyers and journalists were hacked by government clients of NSO, which appear to be Jordanian government agencies, from August of 2019 to December of 2021. The news appears to show that Apple users could still be vulnerable to surveillance by NSO government clients, even after the company sued NSO last November. At the time, Apple said it was filing a lawsuit against NSO and its parent company to hold them accountable for the surveillance and targeting of Apple users. It followed the identification of an exploit by Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto that allowed users of NSO to infect iPhones with the company's Pegasus spyware through a vulnerability in its iMessage function. Apple said at the time that the vulnerability had been patched. The report by Frontline Defenders and Citizen Lab said, "The fact that the targeting we uncovered happened after the widespread publicity around Apple's lawsuit and notifications to victims is especially remarkable. A firm that respected such concerns would have at least paused operations for government clients that have a widely publicized track record of human rights concerns." Jordan's National Center for Cybersecurity categorically denied the findings of the report. It told the Associated Press, "These allegations are baseless and Jordan has not cooperated with any agents with the aim of spying on citizens' phones or censoring their calls." An NSO spokesperson had no comment on the findings, but said that the monitoring of dissidents, activists and journalist activists by any client would amount to a severe misuse of its product. Once Pegasus is successfully deployed against the user, it can hack any phone, intercept messages and emails, view a user's photographs and location, and turn the mobile phone into a remote listening device, allowing an NSO customer to listen in on conversation held in proximity to the phone. NSO has said it investigates serious claims of abuse and that it does not know how its government clients use its spyware. It has claimed Pegasus is only meant to be used against serious criminals and terrorists. Apple did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The report by Frontline Defenders and Citizen Lab named three Jordanian citizens whose phones they said were hacked using Pegasus, including a human rights defender named Ahmad Al-Naymat, who is currently in prison for a case related to protests at Al-Salt State Hospital, where lack of oxygen has killed several COVID-19 patients. The researchers found that human rights lawyer Malik Abu Arabi, who represents Al-Naymat and other activists, was hacked at least 21 times between August of 2019 and July of 2021. A third target, Suhair Jaradat, is a human rights defender and journalist focused on women's issues in the media. The researchers found that Jaradat had been sent text messages and WhatsApp messages with links to Pegasus spyware. The researchers said the WhatsApp message impersonated a popular anti-government Twitter user in Jordan. The researchers' findings were peer-reviewed and confirmed by Amnesty International's Security Lab. The latest news comes as NSO appears to be locked in battle with the managers of Berkeley Research Group, a consultancy that took over management of the fund that owns NSO last year. Berkeley Research Group is engaged in litigation in London with the previous owners of the fund and claim new details about its frayed relationship with NSO. A witness statement filed by Finbar O'Connor, the managing director of Berkeley Research Group in New York, said that cooperation from NSO's management has been virtually non-existent since it began managing the fund that owns the Israeli company. Finbar O'Connor also said that the Berkeley Research Group is still not in possession of information sufficient for it to understand historic actions by NSO that resulted in the Biden administration placing NSO on a Commerce Department blacklist. NSO did not respond to questions about Berkeley Research Group's claims. The charges raise questions about corporate oversight of the company's executive managers in the wake of last year's publication of the Pegasus Project, an investigation into NSO by Forbidden Stories, a journalistic collaboration that included The Guardian. The Pegasus Project reported dozens of cases of individuals who were hacked or targeted by NSO's government clients, including journalists, activists, and government officials. In Finbar O'Connor's witness statement, the Berkeley Research Group executive said that he understood that NSO is undertaking efforts to identify potential US-based investors early in 2021, but that the effort had been halted as a result of the Pegasus Project, which he said negatively impacted investor interest. NSO did not respond to a request for comment in connection to that claim. The company separately faced a new lawsuit in France by a French-Palestinian human rights defender named Salah Hamouri, who, with the International Federation of Human Rights and the Human Rights League, is suing NSO for violating privacy rights in France. An investigation by Frontline Defenders published in November found that the mobile phones of Hamouri, whose Al-Quds residency status has been revoked, and five other Palestinian human rights defenders were hacked using Pegasus, NSO's signature spyware. Frontline Defenders' findings were independently confirmed with high confidence by technical experts at Citizen Lab and Amnesty International's Security Lab, the world's leading authorities on such hacks. At the time, an NSO spokesperson said it could not confirm or deny the identity of government customers, but that it does not operate products itself and is not privy to the details of individuals monitored.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear listeners, and here are some guidelines for the fasting from the Prophet's 15th infallible heir, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, who quotes the Prophet's advice to Jabir ibn Abdullah Ansari. O Jabir, whoever fasts the days of Ramadan, stands for prayers in the part of its nights, guards his or her sexual desires, reins in his or her tongue, lures his or her gaze, and injures not the feelings of others, will become free of sins as on the day he or she was born.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of our faith.
إنما سمي رمضان لأنه يرمض الذنوب.
Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins.
What does Maah Ramadan mean to us?
This is Dialogue, a program on the holy month of Ramadan and the importance of fasting. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program. This is Dialogue. We're talking about the blessed and holy month of Ramadan. The holy month of Ramadan, as you all know, is the blessed and honorable month when the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open. It is the blessed month when forgiveness is easy to gain, but only if we take our steps in this direction. The holy month of Ramadan, the great month when the doors of hell are closed, a beautiful, a blessed, an honorable month, a month where we return towards the Almighty Allah. The holy month of Ramadan, a month where we gain our provisions for our journey towards the hereafter. The holy month of Ramadan, where we establish a connection with our loving, nurturing Lord, our Creator and Sustainer, Allah, exalted and glorified is He. The holy month of Ramadan, the greatest of months, the most honorable of months, this month in which we can return towards Allah, this month in which we can reconnect with Allah, this month in which we can gain the provisions for the hereafter, this, the holy month of Ramadan.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله: إن أبواب السماء تفتح في أول ليلة من شهر رمضان ولا تغلق إلى آخر ليلة منه.
Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم stated: Verily the gates of the heavens are opened on the first night of the month of Ramadan and are not closed again until the very last night.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, the program's dialogue, and we were talking about the holy month of Ramadan. Dear friends, this holy month of Ramadan is one of the greatest and most beautiful and blessed months of the entire year. It is a month which is full of blessings. It is a month which is full of opportunities. It is also the month in which the Holy Quran, the very word of Allah, was sent down to mankind. And this is the only month that has been named in the Holy Quran itself. The night of Qadr, Laylatul Qadr, which is commonly translated as the night of power or the night of destiny, is also in this very month, the holy month of Ramadan. And furthermore, we find that the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, has said in a tradition that all of the divine books which were sent down by the Almighty Allah were sent down during the holy month of Ramadan, the best of Allah's months. Dear friends, this is a month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. And matter of fact, if we read the verses of the Holy Quran, they are multiplied many times fold. So if you were to read the whole Quran in this holy month of Ramadan, especially since this is the month in which this very immaculate and perfect and untouched and unchangeable word of Allah was revealed, isn't it appropriate and rather elegant for us to recite the Holy Quran in this beautiful month? And as the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, has said, all of the divine books were sent down during this very month of Ramadan. And it is this month of Ramadan that is the best of Allah's months. But one quick point here, dear friends, dear fellow fasters in this holy month of Ramadan. This one point is that merely reciting the Holy Quran is not enough. In this holy month of Ramadan, we should try our very best. In this holy month in which the Quran was revealed, we must try our very best to reflect upon the Holy Quran, to think and contemplate upon the words and the sentences and the phrases and the statements of the Holy Quran. What is it that the Almighty Allah, the Creator and Sustainer of everything in existence, is saying to each and every one of us? We must realize that the Holy Quran is a book for humanity on a global level, but it is also at the same time a book for every single individual. So make sure to read, contemplate, reflect, and think over the verses of the Holy Quran in this blessed month, the month of Ramadan, where the Holy Quran was revealed. This is Dialogue, the Holy Month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
The fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of our faith. And all physically fit and mature Muslims are required to fast every day of this month of Ramadan. Fasting is not unique to Islam. It is there in Christianity, in Judaism, even in Hindu and Buddhist tradition. There is this tradition of fasting. However, in Islam, when we talk about fasting, it is more involved in a sense that every day of the month of Ramadan, we have to abstain from dawn to dusk, abstaining from food, even from drinking water, and those who are smokers are not allowed to smoke. On spiritual level, we consider this an opportunity actually to strengthen our willpower. Because the whole exercise of fasting means that we deal with a challenge which goes on within us. We have our soul or conscience on one hand, the emotions and physical desires on the other hand. By midday, we start feeling hungry and thirsty. But even though food is there, water is available, even if we are alone, we abstain. And this is where you see there is an, you know, inner tension. The body is asking food and drink. But your mind, your soul and conscience says, I'm not going to eat and drink. And that's where we see that the willpower becomes more. And when we have a stronger willpower, it will help us on a spiritual level when we deal with temptations which come along the way. And this is a struggle that every human being goes through, irrespective of their religion or creed or their race. And so the month of Ramadan is actually a very important spiritual training, that when we come out at the end of the month with a stronger willpower, and when temptations come along the way, we are able to resist it more easily. And therefore, Islam does not only talk about fasting during the month of Ramadan. In the month of Ramadan, it is mandatory for every Muslim who is physically fit and mature to fast. But even besides the month of Ramadan, there are certain days in every month of the Islamic calendar where it is recommended to do the fasting so that we can continue this process of training ourselves spiritually.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. محارب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها تقيم الوحي فينا محارب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
A zoo in Ireland's capital, Dublin, has unveiled its newest habitat called the Himalayan Hills, a brand new home of the red panda and the snow leopard. Visitors are able to see the red panda's habitat by traveling along the new trail around a rocky edge to an open viewing area. The red pandas are typically climbing, exploring, or munching on bamboo at the top of broad-leafed evergreen trees. The expanded habitat was designed with a red panda's tree-dwelling lifestyle in mind. Also, visitors can gaze up at the 15-meter rocky slope through an impressive panoramic viewing area to spot the snow leopards. These elusive felines are typically nocturnal, so catching a glimpse of one is a rare treat. The project took a few years to complete. It was halted in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic and massive budget shortages, but was restarted after government funding in 2021. The zoo is part of a protection project for red pandas and snow leopards. These animals are listed as vulnerable due to threats from poaching and severe habitat loss. With neon lights on the floor and walls, pulsing electronic beats, and a glowing red shuttlecock bouncing back and forth, Malaysian badminton court evokes a sci-fi movie set. Shuttle in the Dark is a badminton hall in the iconic Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was set up in late 2021 by a sport management company to encourage people to take up the racket sport after 2 years of social restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Director of INIC Sport Management says the initial goal was to draw sports fans and players back into action.
Our initial goal was how can we encourage and gain back the interest of people to come back and play. And not only those enthusiasts, but then as well the new people who was not able to or never play badminton before. So that's why we come out with this experience called Shuttle in the Dark.
Playing on a futuristic court presents an unusual challenge for athletes as they have to adjust their eyes to the darkness to fly. Badminton is one of the most popular sports in Malaysia and Asia, with a thriving community in the Southeast Asian community. It has produced some of the world's top-ranked players. Ancient Pompeii has a new guardian, Spot, a four-legged robot dog that will inspect the ancient Italian city's streets and tunnels to identify structural issues. The robot, designed by the U.S. firm Boston Dynamics, will patrol Pompeii at nighttime. The robot inspects the smallest of spaces and gathers data for planning interventions to fix safety and structural issues. Equipped with a 360-degree camera, Spot will also protect the city's streets from illegal relic hunters who cause structural damage to the ruins by digging tunnels. Pompeii will also have its own eye in the sky, a Leica BLK-2 Fly flying laser scanner capable of autonomously conducting 3D scans of the ruins, helping Spot carry out its tasks. Safeguarding ancient sites from treasure hunters has always been a problem for every country, especially the ancient ones.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching along with other threats has brought the species to the brink of extinction. The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Millions of people across the world celebrate Earth Hour, a symbolic Lights Out event that aims to call attention to environmental issues and the necessity of protecting the planet. The annual event encourages people to turn off their non-essential lighting for an hour and take a break from using electronic devices during that period. Earth Hour takes place every year on the last Saturday of March. The theme of this year's event is Shape Our Future and has been celebrated in more than 180 countries, including Greece, France, Thailand, and Iran. The initiative was first introduced in 2007 by the World Wildlife Fund as a grassroots movement for highlighting the collective responsibility of the people towards their environment. An ancient place in Guatemala with special significance for the Mayan culture could be the next entry on the World Heritage List. The historic village known today as the Takalik Abach Archaeological Park was occupied for 1,700 years before it was abandoned and discovered in 1888. It's said to have been home to a pre-Hispanic people. Archaeologists found their way to this mysterious piece of land where they found a series of exotic artifacts and sculptures back in 2008. Guatemala's Minister of Cultural Heritage says this site has a sacred place in the nation's culture.
Takalik Abach is a sacred place with important links to Guatemala's culture. It's a place that harbors flora and fauna biodiversity and even Mayan spirituality and wars wild. This makes this place highly important within the Mayan culture in Guatemala.
Archaeologists believe the monuments go back to the deep-rooted civilizations of Olmec and Maya in a Central American culture around 400 BC. The government has presented the site to UNESCO, hoping it will be declared a World Heritage Site. A Belgian-British teenager is on a solo flight around the globe that could make him a world record holder. Mark Rutherford started his journey from a small airfield near the Bulgarian capital Sofia on Wednesday. His first destination is the island of Sicily in Italy. From there, he'll fly south to Africa and then around the globe to cross the finish line again in Bulgaria. The 16-year-old pilot says he got his inspiration from his sister.
Egypt's rich history seems to be a gift that keeps on giving. The country has unveiled some exquisite newly discovered tombs. The pharaonic tombs were found at the Saqqara archaeological site south of Cairo. The site is a big necropolis of Memphis, an ancient capital of Egypt. The graves belonged to a senior royal official, or rather senior royal officials. Some of the graves are engraved with interesting titles such as Steward of the Royal House and Supervisor of the Garden. The tombs are around 4,000 years old, dating back to the Old Kingdom of Egypt.
Iranian families celebrated the ancient tradition of Sizde Bedar, or Nature's Day, by spending some quality time outdoors with family. Yusuf Jalali has a story.
It's Nature's Day in Iran, and parks and countrysides are flooded with families who never miss the chance to spend the final day of Nowruz holidays out with their loved ones. The ancient occasion is called Sizde Bedar. Over the past 2 years, the festival was called off amid the coronavirus pandemic, and it's the first time in 2 years that Sizde Bedar is marked with such a huge crowd.
Because of the coronavirus, people could not go out on Sizde Bedar for 2 years in a row. And this year, the majority are vaccinated and green spaces are jam-packed with picnic goers.
We Iranians have grown up with Sizde Bedar and we never miss it. Thank God we can safely enjoy this amazing tradition this year with all our family members and relatives.
Sizde Bedar means getting rid of number 13. In Persian mythology, 13 is the bad luck number. Now Sizde Bedar is believed to chase away the bad luck and bring good vibes.
Today, we cooked special foods like ash and chicken kebab to eat them for lunch with our family members. We traditionally believe that this day brings bad luck and we must spend it outdoors with joy to get rid of it.
The event is also called the Festival of Nature, and it is an occasion to raise awareness of the need to preserve the environment.
Throughout the history, Iranians have had close relationship with nature, and that's why we have dedicated a special day in our calendar to nature. Before we leave our place here, we clean the environment.
Sizde Bedar is the final day of the two-week celebrations of the Persian New Year, known as Nowruz, which marks the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. The tradition has been celebrated for some 3,000 years in Iran, Tajikistan, and Afghanistan, among other communities.
Everyone must have missed outdoor gatherings after more than 2 years of COVID restrictions. Now that worries over the pandemic have eased to some extent, Sizde Bedar once again reunited Iranians with Mother Nature, with all the good vibes and hope for a world free of the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.